Hi, this is Leonard Lopate. You're listening to WNYC On Demand. Podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads available when you want to listen at WNYC.org and iTunes.
WNYC On Demand is supported by DataPipe Managed Hosting Services, providing application management, hosting, professional services, security services, and compliance solutions for mid-market and Fortune 1000 enterprises. DataPipe.com.
You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Throughout the course of his career, Jasper Johns has often chosen to make monochromatic gray paintings, prints, drawings, and sculptures, and the Metropolitan Museum of Art is currently presenting the first major museum show to explore the use of that color in the artist's work. Jasper Johns Gray is on view until May 4th, and I'm pleased to welcome one of the organizers of the exhibit, Ian Altavir, on the show today. Hello.
Hello, Leonard. Thanks so much.
Isn't it unusual for a museum to present a show of the works of an artist in a single color, especially an artist who's best known for his very colorful works?
It certainly is. And the exhibition itself started because of a very large-scale recent work by Jasper that the Art Institute of Chicago acquired a few years ago. And Jasper's most recent works from the past 10 years or so, particularly the catenary series, as they're called, were predominantly gray. And so in looking back at how that related historically to Jasper's work from the past 50 years, we realized all sort of together that gray really is a dominant color in that work. It is a hard sell, though, this show.
Is it really? I haven't heard anybody say anything negative about it.
I'm glad to hear that.
And the reviews were wonderful.
They certainly were. It's a very rewarding show in the sense that it really allows for the viewers to focus on the materiality and the objectness of these works.
So this exhibit originated in Chicago?
It did. It was organized there by James Rondeau and Douglas Druick. And that was last fall, and then it opened here on February 5th, and we only have one more week. It closes on May 4th.
Yeah, well, people better run to the Met. The Met actually has three exhibits right now focusing on artists who changed art. Nicolas Poussin, Courbet, and Johns. And it's interesting that the three of them are all there because each one of them ended one kind of a tradition, or opened up a door, I guess it was, for artists to follow. How did that work with Jasper Johns?
It is a wonderful conjunction of three spectacular exhibitions.
You didn't have that in mind originally.
I think it was a serendipity, but of course it works wonderfully. And at least in the case of the Johns exhibition, it really is a new look at this artist's career. And there is work in the show, as you mentioned, from full 50 years. And so not only does it highlight how he did change art in the sense that focusing instead, you know, a turn away from abstract expressionism.
He's been called a revisionist.
I suppose. In terms of, if one thinks about the New York art world in the 50s, dominated to a large extent by figures like Jackson Pollock, Willem de Kooning, Franz Kline, that group of artists who expressed, so to speak, through paint. Jasper revised that in a way for himself, not wanting to compose abstractly, but choosing things like flags, targets, maps of the U.S. that were already pre-composed, ready-made.
Although he seems to be using the language of the abstract expressionist in a way that is very opposite to the abstract expressionist. So we see paintings that look like they were done freely, but they obviously, when you think about them more, they were done very carefully.
Very carefully.
They meant to look like they were just, that his hand was just moving across the canvas.
Absolutely. In fact, the two paintings that open the show from 1959, both oils on canvas, have, as you say, this sort of abstract expressionist bravura.
One of them is Jubilee. In Shades of Gray, and the other is a very colorful painting called False Start.
Indeed. And both have stenciled names of colors overlaid on top of these, what looks like abstract expressionist brushwork. I should mention, too, False Start, the title of that very colorful work, is also the title, apparently, of a racing print that hung above the bar at the Cedar, which is, of course, the bar where Pollock and de Kooning and Klein would go and drink late into the night. And so, again, another link to that abstract expressionist legacy.
To some degree, the all-gray painting, Jubilee, looks like a black-and-white photograph of a color painting. Was that in his mind at the time?
It's unclear whether it was in Jasper's mind, but I think it's certainly very useful for us to think of it that way. And that's that instance of painting a work in color and then painting it in black, white, and gray is something that we highlight in that first gallery, but also something that that Johns has done throughout his career, so that even in 1984, for instance, there's a grisaille, as we art historians would call it, painting that has a colorful copy that's not in the show but is owned by the Whitney Museum. And so this sort of operation of painting in color and then painting a sort of a reproduction in a way, or, for instance, doing a drawing after the painting, which we have multiple examples of in the exhibition.
Which is the opposite of the way most artists work.
Absolutely. This is a sort of a revolutionary way to sort of a copy after. And that's something we spotlight.
Now, listeners can see the paintings we're talking about and some others because we've included them on a slideshow on our show page at WNYC.org. Another part of this whole gray thing with this colorful painting is that Jasper Johns did a lot of paintings at that time in which he stenciled the names of colors onto the paintings. And sometimes he would stencil the word red over red, but sometimes he'd stencil the word red over blue or orange or yellow. And he's obviously playing with the whole notion of names and what we imagine a color to be in contrast to what is actually the color on the canvas.
Indeed.
And
in fact,
with gray, that becomes even weirder.
Absolutely. And it's as if to say, in a way, that colors and language are both somewhat incapable of expressing what we would think they would be able to express. And that an abstract painting, for instance, with its color is meant to, you know, red is supposed to read as hot or warm or angry or impassioned, or yellow as jealous or something. That perhaps what we name colors and what we think colors mean are perhaps not exactly what they seem. And so, and Jasper had been reading Wittgenstein, for instance, or other philosophers who begin to question nature of language, etc. Very, very intelligent way of expressing that on the surface of a picture.
Is there something about the neutrality of gray that allows other aspects of the work to come through?
I would say certainly. In the gallery in which we show flags, for instance, and there are flags throughout the career. We have an example from 57, but we also have an example from 1994, for instance. They are all in gray, yet each one is in a different medium. And so we have an acrylic one, we have an encaustic and collage version, there's one in a sculpt metal, there's one in sterling silver, there's lithographs, and there's drawings of all sorts. And so all being somewhat gray, they all read quite differently. And because of that neutrality, we concentrate, I think, instead on the material quality of those works.
And it seems when you're looking at these things that he is exploring all different aspects of the same idea. Let's see if we do it this way. Let's see if we do it that way. Color is just one of the many options. And gray seems to, because of all these different techniques that he also put them through, seems to actually have been a lot more common than people would have expected. Roberta Smith of the New York Times called the show a shadow retrospective of a career within a career.
I love Roberta's comment there, and it is very eloquent in a way. Jasper, of course, is famous for having written in a sketchbook of his from the 60s, take something, do something to it, do something else to it, et cetera, et cetera. And so this operation of taking a set image, a flag, a map, a target, and reproducing it in a way in a different media, in a different format, is a way of taking something, doing something to it, and seeing how it changes.
And it's important that it be something iconic, something that, like a flag, like a target.
Johns has also said he likes the flag or a map or a number because it is something the mind already knows. It is something sort of preset, ready-made, and something already familiar to a large group of people. But also when rendered in gray, I think targets and maps and flags become more difficult to see. And so our eye is really drawn in to those images. And we were forced to really examine them closely before we realized that it is a flag that we're looking at.
I remember when I was a painter, and the way I made gray was to take two complementary colors and then add white. And first you get brown, and then you get lighter brown, and then suddenly, like a miracle, you have gray. And so you can have a blue gray, you can have an orange gray, you can have a red gray, a green gray, depending on which of those colors you made dominant. And you see that all over these. There are some paintings that where he seemed to have just taken black and white and made gray that way, but most of them have, these gray paintings have a lot of color in them.
In an interview with the organizing curator at the Met, Nan Rosenthal, In the catalog for the exhibition, he talks a little bit about how he mixed gray over the years and that it's changed somewhat. And I think in looking through the show, once one's eyes are attuned, and this is something Roberta Smith talks about in her review as well, that one's sort of eye is cleansed in a way at the end and one looks at things in a different way. But I think you can see how, you know, a certain gray is cooler than another gray. Or and Johns has talked about, you know, either black and white or, as you say, complementaries plus white. And that sort of experimentation and fascination with how things change materially as you alter them is, again, something quite apparent in the exhibition.
Did you feel that when he went back to a theme like the flags in the earlier days and then later, that you could really tell that there was, that there had been years between the two?
It's an interesting question, and I don't know that I know the answer, in the sense that I think every flag is different, and I don't know that it has necessarily to do with the time between them or just in the different quality of the material. So that the silver cast flag has a sparkly, sort of brilliant and brittle shine to it, whereas this luscious encaustic collage version from 1971 that we have hanging is somehow deeply subtle and skin-like and sensuous. And so I don't know that it is the format or the quality of the material that has anything to do with the time span, or if it is just the difference in the material.
There are also metal sculptures of flashlights, of light bulbs, of beer cans. Is he doing the same thing with those sculptures that he did when he stenciled a color onto another color? It's kind of telling us to rethink what we're seeing.
Well, I'm fascinated that that at least in terms of the sculpture that we have in the exhibition, freestanding sculptures, there's four of them. They all, at least three of them, have to do with light. So we have two light bulbs and one flashlight, and the other to do with looking and. The sculpture is called The Critic Sees, where mouths have replaced the eyeballs inside of the critic's glasses. So looking and light, these are, in a way, ready-made sculptures in the vein of Marcel Duchamp, the Dadaists, that they are found objects that Johns has either cast in bronze or coated with sculpt metal, which is a modeling paste that was common in the 50s and 60s that was used by model airplane makers. But these are everyday objects made strange. And so the slight strangeness, as similarly with an operation of making a flag a monochrome and taking away the color, something strange from our everyday, and our eye looks at it differently.
But unlike Duchamp, he is not just signing his name to the object. Indeed. He's actually doing something to it.
Absolutely.
And altering it. And that all seems to be part of the same process, taking a flag and doing something to it, in effect.
I think you're right, Leonard.
The show runs until May 4th, which is coming up really soon.
Altogether too soon.
And will it be traveling after that?
No, this is the last venue. And a number of our lenders had also lent their works to a show that was organized by Jeffrey Weiss at the National Gallery that traveled to the Kunstmuseum in Basel. And that was directly before the Chicago venue. And so some of these very generous lenders have been without their precious works for 2 years now. And I think it's time to return them.
Jasper Johns Gray, as I said, on view until May 4th at the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And while you're there, you might want to see the Poussin show and the Courbet show as well. Three incredible exhibits in one museum all at one time makes me proud to be a New Yorker. My great thanks to Ian Altavere for coming by to talk about the Johns part of that trio.
Thanks so much, Leonard. It was my pleasure.
And again, you can see a slideshow of the works, or some of the works from the exhibit, on our website at WNYC.org. Thanks for listening to WNYC On Demand. Please check out the other programs at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This is a free service made available by our listeners. Become a member of WNYC today.